This is Isme, and you are listening to No Good Music.
Here amongst and within the walls, shaded sill and curtain still, would you ever call? I'm just here outside your door, desert cracks and all. It's only these hills to comfort me. And as the wild winds blow, can they take me on back to the Ohio?
We have a special guest with us today. They are a folk country singer-songwriter. Last year, they released their documentary, Finding Lucinda. And they have just released their second album, Desert Pavement. Let's all welcome to No Good Music, Isme.
Oh, the crowd.
Chief Electronics.
Can you hear us good?
Yeah, I can hear you. I can hear you. It was breaking up there for a second, but I think we're good now.
Yeah, I don't know what's with the computer today. The internet just got a little message that it's unstable.
Oh, hey, okay. So should we refer to you as Isme or your given name Avery? What do you prefer today?
I think Isme is better. It's more straightforward.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
That sounds good.
So where are you today? You're from the Bay Area. For our listeners, that's around San Francisco.
Yeah, so I don't live there anymore. I lived there for about 10 years and I grew up there. But I live out kind of near Reno now. So it's snowing right now, which is actually kind of
fun. Oh, wow.
Right. I heard a lot of storms coming through Northern California to the Sierra Nevadas is what I heard.
Oh, yeah. 100 inches, that's what they say.
Yeah. Yeah, we're New Jersey and Pennsylvania meet.
You've seen snow before, have you? I don't know.
You do meet some people from California that haven't seen snow, and it's quite an excitement for them. But yeah, I'm glad to have it. I mean, I grew up in the Bay where it was sunny and warm all the time, and then the first time I actually had to get through a full winter, I was like, this is what seasonal affective disorder is.
You know? What I enjoy most about winter is a fire. Do you enjoy having a good fire?
Oh yeah, I mean we got woods out the wazoo here, you know. We got too many trees in California, and so, you know, we actually need to be, you know, doing more of these nice hearth fires here. So that's what we got going right now downstairs. We got a big old fire.
When did you start writing music? And who were maybe some of your musical influences?
Yeah, well, I did a little bit of music writing when I was a little kid, you know, as all, you know, people are more creative in those days. But I wasn't really, you know, on track to be a professional musician growing up. I was kind of into musical theater, but I wasn't really good enough to do that. So I did my own thing. And then I grew up, my grandfather started a free Bluegrass Roots Festival in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
so
we
I
want
attended
to talk about that.
But it was sort of like... Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's, you know, that festival was sort of separate from what I did. It was sort of like those were the performers and I was just sort of part of the family. And then when I was about 19, my grandfather passed away and we had to, you know, kind of carry the torch of Hardly Strictly Bluegrass to the next generation, my parents and my generation. And that's how I got much more involved in music. And so growing up, I listened to, you know, a lot of Emmylou Harris and Alison Krauss and things like that. And then, you know, when the indie wave kind of happened in the 2000 through 2010 or so, I got, you know, really swept up in that and had a lot of fun listening to like Cat Power, Soof John Stevens, those kinds of people.
So let's talk about, actually, let's skip to the, because I do have it here, about the Hardly Strictly.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Yeah, yeah.
So your grandfather was Warren Hellman, who started the festival in 2001. This, of course, takes place every year in San Francisco. I looked up some of the early performers there, and it was like Willie Nelson, Dolly Parton. I'm assuming you've performed at the festival.
Is that true, or were you a young teen or during that time?
Yeah, when it's When it started, I was about 8 years old. And so the first year was relatively small. I mean, it had Emmylou Harris and Hazel Dickens and Steve Earle. I don't remember if he was there in the first year, but it had some big acts, but it was small. It was one stage. It was probably a couple thousand people. And then it grew and grew over the years. And so I grew up attending it for sure. I saw Willie Nelson. I remember that. I saw Dolly Parton. And that was a really big part of my growing up. I mean, getting to see that amazing country and roots music. As it changed over the years, I was really lucky, but I don't think, you know, I don't know that I fully appreciated it. It was kind of an interesting thing because, you know, the festival was free, so anybody could go. And like I said, I wasn't necessarily on track to be a professional musician growing up because nobody in my family was. It wasn't, we weren't professional musicians as a family. So I was very influenced by it, and it was kind of part of my life, but I wouldn't say that it was sort of like, I'm going to be the next Alison Krauss, you know. But, you know, I just fell in love with playing roots bluegrass music, and I found mentors in some of the people involved in the festival, and that was a big thing that helped me become a professional musician, was having those mentors of people who loved music and just did it as, you know, it's almost like a lifestyle. It's not just a job. It's a way of life.
Yeah. It sounds like the festival was really chill, too, being small and free. So it sounds like it was really casual and chill, not, you know, the grand event, you know, oh, there's here, you know, this person's coming. You know, it sounds like it's more friendly and chill.
Yeah, I mean, I think having a free festival makes it so it's really about everybody is sort of ideally on a relatively equal playing field as much as is possible at a concert. Right. It wasn't this sort of hyped up world of, you know, people dropping big dollars to be there. I would hope that it was the kind of a place where anybody felt like they could go. And, you know, in those early years, because it was sort of different security wise, it was just open, literally no entryway. And unfortunately, things have changed since then. Yeah. But back
probably,
then, it was just anybody hanging out.
Yeah,
exactly. And it was the right decision. But the early years, it was very much like anybody, you know, still anybody can go. It's just, you know, you have to get through a check-in and all that stuff, but it's still free. And that was just incredible. I mean, I think it felt like it was a different kind of a music. It wasn't, you know, wasn't super exclusive. And I think that's an important part of folk music is what draws people to it. Is it's supposed to be for everybody.
Right. And I think that Willie Nelson, Emmylou Harris, they exude that that humility and such. You know, I've not met either of them, but it comes through. You know.
Yeah, I mean they're fans. Yeah, Willie Nelson or Emmylou Harris, like they're drawn to the fans as almost equal parts of the project. You know, you can't have a musician of that caliber without the fans that are dedicated to the music.
Now, was there one stage, or were there more than? We had a free music festival here in New Jersey, and it was three stages. You know, they had the bigger stage and then two smaller stages.
Yeah, when it started out, it was just one stage. And as it grew, now I think there's probably six stages or so.
Oh, wow.
So it's grown a lot. Every year, you know, you kind of added one more. And then this last year, we added a new stage that I worked on with my family that's called the Horseshoe Hill Stage. That's named after a place in the Bay Area. It's named after a road where my grandfather used to have a horse ranch. And we sort of wanted to create this feeling of like the places of inspiration, people who, you know, the cultures that informed roots music, American roots music, like what was the place that they grew up in? And so much like Appalachia or the South or all over the United States. Mm-hmm. And it was inspired by Hazel Dickens or Dolly Parton's childhood cabin and kind of recreating this scene of where music, folk music came from, which was a home or a hearth or a family or a community. And so anyways, I was part of that new stage that's going to continue on and started last year. So it's quite big now. I mean, definitely crowded, but I hope that it's down to earth for people and feels, you know, approachable to everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that you mentioned, you mentioned Appalachia, which we used to call Appalachia. It's switching to Appalachia, and us old folks are trying to deal with that. But anyway, I lived in I lived in Virginia for 25 years. And so in Newmarket, I worked with great niece of Patsy Cline. I worked with, I'll throw a hello out to Amanda Cline. Also, my kids went to school there in the Shenandoah Valley. And right in front of the new high school was this little white house. And they said, that is Patsy Cline's grandfather. Patsy Cline used to come here and hang out with her grandfather and play in those fields that are now my kid's high school. And it's just, you know, the history's right there. It's rich. You know, it's pretty cool to think, you know, you're over in California, we're over here on the East Coast, talking that music. You lived and worked on a ranch that your mother purchased. Tell us about that and how that affected your music possibly.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm the youngest of five siblings. And so when I was graduating high school, sort of like an empty nest thing, and my mom had, you know, been a stay at home parent, was kind of looking for her next chapter in life. And I got really interested in environmental stuff and farming and that kind of whole intersection of those worlds. And so this was sort of soon after the 08 crash, and there were a lot of ranches for sale in the north of the Bay Area. And so my mom had this dream. She loved horses, and she had this dream of having her own ranch that she could run with me. And so we worked on it together from day one. You know, I was out there before there was electricity, you know, digging the garden beds and trying to dream a big game of what we could do with it. And so I was always kind of torn between these two worlds of farming and music. And I mean, it's not a bad intersection because there's a lot of interesting overlap, but and a lot of inspiration to be had on the ranch. But I also felt like when I was starting to play music professionally at 19, kind of playing out, I felt like, well, what do I have to say? Like, what's the perspective that I have? And I felt like if I could work on that ranch and learn and figure out who I was, I would have a little bit more of something to say and a perspective to come from. And I was really inspired by, you know, the folk life of the Western United States and the whole cowboy culture and all that kind of stuff. And so I just wanted to have an opportunity to have learning experiences outside of just purely playing music. And so, yeah, I worked there for about 10 years, mostly working with sheep, and then did a lot of environmental restoration. So that's just like replanting trees in creeks, you know, kind of trying to restore environmental functioning, boring stuff like that. But yeah.
Yeah. And that's the reason that many of us in middle America, you know, go camping. You know, I've been hiking and camping my whole life. I love the outdoors, raised near woods and building forts years and years ago. And there's something special and about the simple life, about, you know, being, you know,
getting your hands dirty.
Well,
being nature
and learning, you know, as a kid, how to build a fort. I'm building a rock patio at age 11. You know, I'm building a fire, you know, when we're 11 and 12, and whether I'm supposed to or not doesn't matter. But these are the, you know, and I wish, you know, we both didn't grow up on farms or have horses or sheep or anything like that. You know, but we hear about that. Yeah, it's I think it can be those learnings, you know, I think it can be something, especially for a 19, 20 year old. You know, it's like, this is something I just learned how important this is. That's awesome. Yeah,
for sure. And, you know, it's hard first starting out with songwriting, trying to figure out who you are. And I think a lot of people, there's a lot of pressure to kind of rush things. And I wanted to take my time as a writer and to kind of, you know, have the time to develop my voice. And I knew that, you know, I had to just continually write song year after year, and I didn't need to rush into being anything. I needed to work on the songwriting, most importantly. And I hope that's what those years helped me to do. And that's kind of what I worked on. Yeah.
Yeah. And we can see it in your songwriting.
And that's only your second album, the one that just came out, but just love all the songs on that album. We'll get to your album soon, but we want to, go into the documentary. I'm sure one of the people that influenced you a lot, maybe growing up, was Lucinda Williams, of course. And you put out a documentary last year. Now, this film was part of the San Francisco Film Festival. I think that just happened maybe 2-3 weeks ago. So how does it feel getting your film into this festival? And How did the film do? Like, what was the reception? I'm sure the reception was great
because
of the person you were documenting.
Yeah. I mean, making the film is a very thrilling thing because I love Lucinda, and she's one of those artists that the better you know her, the more you admire her. And that's what I love in an artist. And so, you know, when we set out to make the documentary, it was because I was in a Lucinda Williams tribute band with my dad. Wasn't necessarily looking to make a film that I was in per se, but I felt like I could be a stand-in for the audience as a younger songwriter learning from Lucinda and kind of going mm-hmm. on a journey. And, you know, for anybody who's like a nerd about storytelling, having a journey, a person kind of protagonist going through some changes is like a good way to tell a story mm-hmm. and to mm-hmm. and to convey emotions, as opposed to, you know, we could have approached the film as more like this happened and this happened in her life, but we wanted to approach it more as an artistic thing into itself. And so we worked on the film starting in 2019 and then finished it last year in 2023. And then, yeah, it was in a film festival in Birmingham, Alabama, and then a film festival in San Francisco. And it was, you know, it's nerve-wracking to see an audience in front of your piece yeah. because you there's always going to be somebody that doesn't like it and it's just getting in your head, but you know there's always mm-hmm. going to be somebody too that it really means something to. And mm-hmm. I think the film is really about the artistic process and about doubt as an artist, and I think an important topic that people can gain a lot from contemplating. And I hope the film, you know, we didn't set out to make a film that informs somebody about every little detail. I hope it conveys the importance of being a writer unto itself, which is what Lucinda Williams is. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's going to be coming out. You know, people can watch it later this year. It's going to be coming out for streaming and all that kind of good stuff. Okay. But it's scary, you know, to put it out there because.
Yeah, I was going to ask where our listeners could find it.
Yeah.
What would it be on, like?
Yeah, I mean,
Amazon or.
Yeah, or, it'll be on Amazon for purchase, and then Apple TV too. And I think it'll probably either be late summer, early fall.
Okay.
And then, I mean, a good way to keep in touch is just to, we have an Instagram account and a Twitter and mm-hmm. a website, findinglucindafilm.com. Okay. And that's a good way to stay informed because, you know, it'll be out there and available for people to watch. But in the meantime, we're going to be screening in Nashville in April, and then we're going to be screening it here in the Sierra Nevada mountains in June, and then probably again a few locations later this year. So it's fun to watch in person, but I know some people rather stay at home, Netflix and chill, mm-hmm. so to yeah. speak. And that's they'll be able to do that later this year.
We'll definitely watch it.
Yeah. Speaking of Lucinda, of course, you're aware of Amos Lee's recent album from last October, All Lucinda Songs. Yeah, we're both Amos Lee fans, have been for five albums now.
Yeah, we drove to
New Hampshire
to see Amos last year.
Yeah, he was supported by the Boston Pops, so it's a full orchestra and his band in the front, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
We had pretty good seats there. Close. The whole venue was pretty cool, too, being mm-hmm. Quasi-outdoor.
It was a place we'd never been before. Mm-hmm. Forget what it was called.
But now this would have been right before, we saw him last year, so it would have been right before he put this out in October. But
yeah.
I just love the Honeysuckle Switches with all of her album. What do you think of the album? Do you have a review or do you love it? Do you like it?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's amazing. I mean, and it's so cool to see, I think he's great. I mean, I think his covers are great. And I think he's somebody I actually met like maybe 2018 or so. He was friends of friends mm-hmm. and he was just such a great guy. I was playing sort of one of the first times I ever played Hardly Strictly. I played my own music and I was still kind of figuring things out, you know. Mm-hmm. I wasn't, you know, established, and he was just so supportive. He came up, he's like, that was really great, and was really nice, and we got to hang out, and he's such a great guy. And I hadn't realized what a big Lucinda fan he was, but I would love to reach out to him at some point. You know, I haven't talked to him since that time in 2018 mm-hmm, or so, mm-hmm. but I would love to reach out to him and talk to him about Lucinda and hear his perspective, because he's such an accomplished songwriter. He's so incredible and has such a wonderful spirit that I'd be curious. I'm always curious to hear what other people hear in her music mm-hmm. that I don't necessarily have a grasp on, because there's so much more to understand about her. And also, every songwriter, artist, we come from a different perspective, a different personality. And I was talking to one of my friends, Margot Silker, the other day, who's an amazing kind of alt-country artist. And she brought to my, you know, my mind her own perspective why she loves Lucinda. And she was talking about this song, The Night's Too Long. That's one of, I think, Lucinda's best songs. And she was like, I really identify with the character she's writing about. And that was really cool to hear another artist talk about something specific about the writing that they identify. So anyways, I hope I can, I can meet Amos again and just talk to him about it. And I would love to see him perform her music. That would be amazing.
Yeah. Amos grew up and was a school teacher. You probably knew that, in Philadelphia, not far from here. And so, you know, being in a different professions, Rob and I, just thinking, coming from the school teacher and teaching the kids to, you know, bringing the music to the class, I'm sure he must have. And then getting and reaching out. And Amos really, really helped me through COVID. Every Thursday night, he had a live.
Streaming.
He had a streaming live. And just there on Thursday nights with him for about 2 hours, it's like, and he's just chilling with the people. So it was really good. And what was the name of the person you just mentioned? Margo?
Margo Silker. So it's spelled C-I-L-K-E-R.
Okay, thanks. Just when I get our listeners turned on to
this. She's amazing.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So let's talk about your new album, Desert. I'm sorry, Desert Pavement.
Pavement. That's too, that's a juxtaposition there. Yeah. Desert Pavement. Yeah. Desert
Pavement. Desert.
Yeah. Oh, I got to interrupt. So, I got right before we talk about that. So I drove around Death Valley one time because it was 106 degrees, but I was never in Death Valley. But did you hear about all the rains bringing the lake there? A new lake has formed in Death Valley. It's huge.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean,
yeah.
The earth,
anyway,
man.
I just thought, you know, you were on the other, on the left coast there, so I thought maybe you had heard about that.
No, I mean, you're more attuned to the weather news than me. I'm kind of clueless.
So there's a new lake that's like, I don't know how many acres or square miles. It's all there, and new things will come up out of the desert because of that. Yeah. I mean, there's the lakes.
I don't know the weather sometimes, unless my wife tells me, you know, we're getting, you know, 8 inches of snow.
This is the lowest, hottest place in the entire continental 48. And and it's just thought, you know, being into things that you're into, I thought maybe you heard that. I digress.
Okay. The first single you released was Stranger in the Barn.
I walk from the house to the barn that sits down by the brook. In front of me on hay, he sleeps. I've gotta go tell someone here. Man's bedding down by the sheep.
Was this song inspired by something that really happened? I love this video, the video for the song.
A lot of work was put into it, for sure.
But working on a ranch, and did you find someone sleeping in a barn?
Is it true? Where'd that come from? In a dream, maybe. Go ahead.
Is it true? Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
So I, when we first bought the ranch, basically it had been abandoned for almost a decade. So the house was falling over. There were cows in the front yard. And when we went into the barn, we had seen evidence that somebody had been, sleeping in there, like a, I guess they call it like a squatter. And it was crazy. I mean, cause this is a, the house was about a mile up a dirt road on a mountain. So it's not like easy to get to. And so I don't know if somebody walked, if somebody drove, I don't know how they got there. I would have never done something like that, because I'd be scared out of the bejesus if somebody would find me. But anyways, there had been somebody sitting in the barn, and I guess they had kind of skittered off by the time that we took control of the property. But it was, the story was inspired by that. And it was sort of, I saw it more as an allegory, the song Strange in the Barn. That's, it's about, you know, if you encounter a stranger, do you meet them with an immediate sense of defensiveness, or can we get to our higher selves and meet them at least with an open heart? And the point of the story is that there was a stranger that came to the family's barn, and the child in the family discovers the stranger while they're still sleeping. They, the child goes to the parents and says, oh my gosh, there's a stranger in the barn, what do we do? And they debate and ultimately decide to meet the stranger with open arms. And all the person was doing was just sort of walking on down to go to an event. And so it's you know, I mean, it's sort of, it's allegorical. It's sort of like almost like a children's story, but the obviously the song is not a child song, but it's not for kids, but, but it's sort of, you know, me always trying to reach my higher self as an individual and remember the defensiveness is sometimes irrational in all kinds of situations, not literal strangers, but people we're afraid of. A lot of times we meet with defensiveness as opposed to having just a tiny crack open in the door that maybe this person isn't as bad as we might think.
That's a great explanation. And, you know, it's simple trespassing. I used to trespass a lot. That's probably my biggest crime. I don't know if you knew that. You know, just as a kid, just always going over fields and then into the stream and then through somebody's barn, you know, daytime, not sleeping there. But yeah, trespassing. And so I would want the benefit of the doubt for sure.
Well, this guy, person might have been just passing through.
Yeah.
You know.
Innocently.
Just found a barn.
Yeah, exactly.
In. I love the video, though, because it reminds me of like old movies where they had to paint the backdrops and the... I urge our listeners to look up this video.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Stranger unique. In the Barn, because it's like I said, layered and...
And it has that strange puppet, right?
And I love that, but I love everything about this. I showed it to my wife. She loved it too. Mm-hmm. But when you're running and the crow, you know, the crows, you can see them on the strings,
Yeah.
But I did want to ask about the puppet. Like, where did this, did someone create the puppet for the video? Is this a puppet you own? Where is the puppet?
The puppet, he just showed up one day. No, I was kidding. The filmmakers, Rose and Bodhi, they found him from a puppeteer who makes them in Turkey. And and then we hired, there's a marionette, and I don't know, a puppeteer, marionetter, I don't know how you'd say it. But anyways, he lives in Sweden. He's a well-known Swedish puppeteer named Thomas Lindquist. And so he actually did the smaller puppets that are in the middle of the film, and then the big man puppet, he animated them and did that whole thing. But the puppet was from Turkey and was all handmade. And I don't remember the name of the person who did it now, but I can send you later a link to his website. Okay. He makes lots of puppets.
So where is the puppet? Like, who has the puppet?
So, you just want to know if it's alive or not.
Yeah, where is he?
So he's in a storage facility in Brooklyn right now, sadly. But he'll make it back home someday.
You should bring him on tour with you. You know, if you get the puppet here.
I think that'd be great.
That would be, like, really cool.
Plus, I have my new epithet in case I don't appreciate someone. You big man puppet.
What?
No, it's a phrase now. Look, I wrote it. Big man puppet.
I don't think that's a phrase.
It is now. Big man puppet.
It's going to spread like wildfire.
Yeah. I'm on TikTok. Look out.
So I have two other songs from the album that I wanted to... I Called You Up. I think the sound kind of has a Lumineers kind of sound to it. And the drums, if you call them drums, it sounds like, and I'm not trying to put down the song, but it sounds like someone's hitting a trash can lid.
I play drums, and I think it's something metallic, on the snare. You could put a small cymbal on the snare and wrap it. But anyway,
I got from the lyrically, I think this is about someone moving away from their, like, out of the house.
A 20 something.
You know, and you wanting, maybe when you were younger, you'd have these long conversations with your mother and you could sit at the table. But you're calling her on the phone and it's very limited. She's got stuff to do. That's what that's in the song. So tell us a little bit about this one. I love this song.
Yeah. So from the production, yeah, it's interesting how that sound came about. It was a regular drum kit. Then the mixing engineer, D. James Goodwin is his name. So he wasn't there during the production of the recording of the actual record, but he was really, you know, the one who mixed it. And I think I kind of wanted him to push himself to take some risks and do some effects on the instrumentation, because I was excited by his aesthetic and just giving it another layer of like uniqueness and creativity.
Yeah, right.
And so I think you'll hear, like, there's even mandolin. So at the end of another song, The Window Shade, you'll hear it sort of sounds almost like an affected guitar. It was actually just a mandolin, but then he put some really cool effects. I can't know exactly. So he was very involved in sort of the more can sounding drum that's on there.
Yeah.
And then from the songwriting perspective, yeah, I think you nailed it exactly what the song is about. It's about, you know, having a parent that is, you grow up and the parent has their own life and you realize that their whole life isn't about you and that you have to embrace that reality that, you know, your parents are adults, you're an adult, and, you know, they used to be the one tending to you, and not all parents want to do that for the rest of their life. You know, some parents do, but in this story, it's sort of like about that, of just kind of having to separate. I mean, it's a painful process that I think is another stage of adolescence, is what people go through in their 20s, which is the separation and the changing relationship between parent and child. And it can be difficult for both in different ways. And it's just sort of about embracing the change that comes from the shifting relationship.
Yeah.
And I think that, of course, as young adults, we look at it differently as far as the experiences that we had and relationship we have with our parents. You know, there are some who just run away. I'm out of here, you know, and don't even want or need that relationship. But, you know, you're writing this from...
I wanted to be on my own.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I got married when I was 18. That only lasted a couple of years.
Yeah.
But, and then I moved back with my parents, and that was hard.
Yeah, it sure was.
Because then I was, you know, I was 21 and I'd go out with my friends and come in at like 2 a.m. and
Should I do your mom's voice?
So that's a...
Ronnie!
Okay.
I just had to do that. Come on.
But my son's 20. He'll be 21 in June. So he still lives with us, but that's fine.
But
he has a job. He worked. Yeah, so... But it is.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard. He has his own friends, but we're actually going to Atlantic City in like 3 or 4 weeks. We don't do a lot of, when he was younger, we did more bonding stuff, but we're going to see some MMA fights and staying overnight. So, and we really haven't, I've never taken a trip, just my son and I.
Oh, it's just you two.
Okay. Yeah.
So another song.
Yeah. Streaming Family. You know, I want to know how Ismay, how much time do you spend on your phone? Because I know I spend a lot of time. And what is the show? I'm really interested. I don't know why.
Oh, we have guests.
Unless you're making it up, but what is the show you've seen 1,000 times?
Is there one of those shows?
And I have the feeling it's a reality show. If it's true.
Okay. It is real. Yeah, it's definitely based on real life. I mean, I have a couple shows, but I'm much more drawn to, like, I love comedies, like not sitcoms, not the cheesy stuff, like some more sophisticated. Do you have what the show I was talking about is?
I just came up with Modern Family, but that's probably not it.
Oh, is it a TV show?
Oh, that's pretty close. Yeah, TV show.
What's that other one?
How about the one that? How about Schitt's Creek? Is that that's a family?
No, that's not really. That's not family show.
No. Anyway, it's a family. Aren't they a family? Aren't they a family?
No, wait, The Middle. The Middle.
No, The Middle.
No.
Okay, these are really good guesses. You got really close. So the show I was talking about is Arrested Development.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I've never watched that.
I love that show. Oh my gosh, it's
I'm gonna have to watch that show now.
I'm gonna give you an excuse. I didn't have the channel. But go ahead.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, no, it's all good. I mean, I like more than just that. But that was just a comedy that I think, you know, when I was in high school was when a lot of these really amazing comedies were coming. It was like The Office, Arrested Development, Dirty Rock. All these shows that were just so funny were coming around. And then, you know, the implementation of streaming, this access we had, you didn't have to buy a DVD or wait for it to be on TV.
Oh, yeah.
You could just watch whatever you wanted, whenever you wanted. And the song Streaming Family kind of came from this realization, like, whoa, I didn't realize, you know, how many things in technology and modern life are named after like natural phenomena. And I was like, whoa, streaming is named after a literal stream. I mean, it seems kind of obvious, but it was kind of interesting to me. And then I just was sort of talking about something that I think is really a huge part of our culture, especially after the pandemic, is like this like epidemic of loneliness that we have as people. And the theory of the story of the song Streaming Family is instead of having a real family, this person just has this family in the background, this TV show that they're always playing in the background, so they don't feel alone. And that's definitely something that I do. I mean, it's a little bit of a silly concept, but it's something that I definitely do. And I grew up in a big family. I grew up with four other siblings and we were all really close in age. So I think I was used to a lot of this chaos and a lot of noise. And I love having one of my favorite things to do, and this is so random, but when I have a party at my house, that's the easiest time I can fall asleep. When there's people hanging out downstairs.
Really?
That's how, it's just so weird, but it's like I fall asleep so easily on those days. And so I was just realizing how much maybe I was replacing this sort of like chaos, which has its own downsides, but the other people being around with just television or, you know, social media or streaming things into my life.
I'm the youngest as well, youngest of three, but I like it quiet, but that's just because my mother made it that way. Our house was super quiet, so I need it quiet to sleep. So it sounds
and
like
I was an only child.
Yeah, so you're youngest too.
Youngest to one, oldest in the middle.
So, brothers and sisters, you have how many brothers or sisters?
I have four sisters, and yeah, we were all born within like 7.5 years, and I was born in Hong Kong, so my family was living there, when I was born, and you know, it was great.
Matt lived there for like a year.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
I was there in 91 and 92, in Hong Kong.
That's when I was born, 1992, Hong Kong.
Oh. No, I left in August, mid-August of 92.
Oh, you were left right before I arrived.
Yeah. Let's see, I was over in New Territories.
So funny,
Wangok was the area that we avoided, but I was in, I think, Chimsatjoy. Yeah, so in the New Territories of Hong Kong. Where were you?
I remember the exact neighborhood, but I think I was born in, I always forget. I only lived there until I was about four, but we lived, there's a name neighborhood, but I don't remember. It was kind of like up on the hill. It was high up that we lived. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You'd probably know it if I.
That's awesome.
I'm not sure I remember.
Lots of connections. And Rob has been to Sweden a couple times.
Twice.
You mentioned Sweden.
Oh,
It's lots of small world stories here.
Yeah, not last year, the year before. We stayed there for 3 weeks.
It's a long time.
Like cool.
Tiny apartment where you're sleeping in the living room, tiny kitchen.
So bathroom. Is there big man puppets there? I mean, you could have encountered a big man puppet. I'm just.
Wait a minute. I did encounter a puppet.
No.
I have
repressed memories.
I have video. And it was and it was awful because
Marionette or
Marionette, I have video. I'll send your publicist the video.
Wow.
It was on
That's awesome. Wow.
One of the streets
Well, nothing. No, I never heard of this before, so go ahead.
I forget what song it was. You think I'd remember it because he was playing it over and over. And I don't know if the puppet was like, I don't think the puppet had a mouth that could move. But you know what it was? My wife was in a store shopping and I was standing there and I should have moved, but I kept hearing a song like three or four times.
So let me go
and
back.
It was an American song. It wasn't a Swedish. It wasn't like ABBA. Huh. Or anything.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Marionettes
anyway,
to ABBA.
Yeah. Okay, enough about puppets.
But for our listeners who are going to be listening to this and interested in you, not interested in us, so you're actually born in Hong Kong. Is that what you said? And how
that
happened? If you want to tell, you don't have to tell. But how were you born and what were your parents doing in Hong Kong?
Yeah, my parents are, you know, are Americans and they're from California for the most part. And my dad got a job working out of Hong Kong. You know, there's a lot of changes that were happening in that area around the time, a lot of like development of commerce. Mm-hmm. And so I think, I don't know, I guess my mom is totally nuts. I mean, five kids moving to a foreign country.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
She's such an adventurous person because, you know, she grew up in a small town in Southern California and she probably never traveled at all growing up. I don't even know if she ever left the country, but mm-hmm. When she was only about 23, 24 when she had her first kid. She was pretty mm-hmm. young. And she just embraced, you know, bringing us kids to the Great Wall of China. She went to Thailand with her mom. She just became very, very adventurous. And that's the kind of person she is. She's always moving from place to place. And anyways, it was a great place to grow up part of the time. And then we moved back to San Francisco when I was about 4. But it's just an incredible area, and the mm-hmm. culture is so cool. The food in Hong Kong is incredible. And then, you know, I've been back there a couple times since. Mm-hmm. I spent a semester in high school living in Vietnam, which was really, really cool. It's always fun talking with people who've lived out there, you know, and I recently reconnected. There's a family that lives near where I live now, and they actually, when I met them, I hadn't realized, but they actually lived in Hong Kong the same time as me and were friends with my parents, which is crazy.
Wow. Oh, wow.
And so we share a lot of good memories from that. And their kids grew up in Hong Kong too. So, mm-hmm. but it was great. I mean, just an incredible part of the world. And I hope I can make it back there sometime soon.
So it was for business. Your dad was doing business there in Hong Kong. Yeah, that's what you said. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
I tell people it's like living in Manhattan, but just a little bit English, mostly Cantonese, but it's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a large city.
I used to get Apple TV. I don't have it anymore. But you were on a show called My Kind of Country. Reese Witherspoon, Kacey Musgraves. Most importantly, I have this obsession with Orville Peck. I don't know why.
Oh, yeah.
And I used to say I didn't like country music, but I like Johnny Cash, Patsy Cline. I like the old style. And I like Orville Peck. I listened to his album many times, his last album. Just tell us about the show and the experience and meeting Orville Peck, or if you did meet Orville Peck.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was insane. You know, the process of being part of the show was like a multi-year process because I think they kind of greenlighted the project right before the pandemic. And so there were a lot of stops and starts with that. And then they brought us out to, so the film crew filmed in everybody's original hometown. So they came to Sonoma County, where I was living. They came to my family's ranch, and then they went to other people's homes. So some people lived in South Africa, some people lived in Mexico, some people from India. Mm-hmm. So they went all over the world to find people who loved country music. That was the coolest thing ever, because I'm like a huge fan of multiple cultural influences coming together and creating a type of mm-hmm. music that otherwise wouldn't exist. I love that. Mm-hmm. And so anyways, getting to hear those other people on the show was amazing because of the different influences that they brought to country music. And then, so each of us in the show, so there were 12 different, you know, artists, and each of us got assigned like a coach. And so it was my coach was Orville Peck.
Oh.
And so basically,
so I know nothing about the show, so that's pretty cool.
And it was amazing, and I was on a Zoom and they're like, you're gonna meet your coach, and I was like, okay, mm-hmm. whatever. And then I see Orville Peck pop up on the Zoom screen because I had no idea that's who it was gonna be. I was like, what the heck? This is the coolest thing ever. I was like shocked. I was just sitting in my silly car on a Zoom outside the library, a weirdo. And then I was like, what? And I was so excited. And so when they flew all of us out to Nashville to do some performances and film the process. And I got to meet him. I got to hear his advice. And the best piece of advice he gave to me was, and this is so him. He said, whatever you are, the thing that you are, be more that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's what he's done. I mean, as an artist, that's why he stands alone, because he took these risks with wearing the mask and his style and his musical style. And he's the most himself. And I've tried to apply that as much as I can. And that's what the music video Stranger in the Barn was for me, was that was me being like, okay, this is the most me I can be. It was a great experience. He's a really nice guy. I don't know what he looks like in real life. I never got to see under the mask. He's a very good, he's a good guy. Right.
Right. And so it's really the old advice, be yourself, which is only two words, be yourself. It's taking that another step further. Yeah.
I think you get the most respect being yourself.
Exactly.
Kind of turned off by people who, you know, I'm a big Kiss fan.
Believe it or not.
So
the band, Kiss,
Ace Frehley. He doesn't like, right? So he, like, probably when I was a kid, I imagine he lived in a big mansion. And he was sitting on a throne or, like, you know, in Gene Simmons or whatever. But Ace Frehley, him and his, I think it's his wife or his girlfriend, they post a video the other day. He's in the grocery store and he's being himself. You know, he's not like being aloof, or he went to Walmart looking for his, he just came out with a new album. And he was signing out and like taking pictures with people. And he was just so, you know, down to earth.
Yeah.
And you have people that kind of, I think the more famous you get, it's hard not to, you know, I don't want to bring up Taylor Swift, but I mean.
But you just did.
Yeah.
But, who was country? Who was a form of country?
But for people to like hate her, she's such, I've never met her, but the things that she does, and for her to still be herself at that level is amazing, I think.
Yeah.
And nobody talks, not many people talk about it.
Right, right. And one of the best videos of Taylor Swift is not a music video. Have you seen the video of Taylor Swift talking to her managers and parents and everything, saying how she's going to get political, and they say it's going to destroy her career? And she's like, I don't care. And she's just, it's an awesome video. Yeah. Now, it could have been all set up. It might not have been just informally videoed. but they're really getting into it. He goes, I bought you all these armored cars. What the, you know? And she's like, I don't care. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's awesome.
No, it's a really interesting concept in to think about who am I and how can I be myself. And I think the farther you get in music, the harder it is, because you're wondering, what is it about what I've done before that people are drawn to? And am I aware of that? And you might make the wrong assumptions. You might think, oh, people are drawn to my voice, or people are drawn to my earnestness. And you just never know the real reason. It's sort of intangible. And it's a difficult, you know, decision to make. But you're right. There's certain artists out there that really do a great job of maintaining that. And that's hard. It's really hard to do, because you don't want to disappoint people. But if you always are muting yourself and holding back, I mean, you're also not going to connect with people. So you have to find the ways to be yourself and have your integrity. And that's, you know, I don't think it's an answerable question, but I think it's important to try it.
I think it's easier too now with social media to put out a video or go live and the fans to see who you really are than back when we were growing up. You know, like people like Alice Cooper, you thought he was just, I mean, I think at one point he was crazy, you know, on drugs and stuff, but you thought he was just, he was like that the whole time. You know, he's out there mowing the grass with the mascara on and stuff.
But he's not. He's a normal guy.
But now with social and seeing him, you know, on the golf course, and he had to separate. I love the story. He had to separate himself from the state, from that persona, because that was the problem. When he walked off that stage and he was still Alice Cooper, that's when he was drinking. So he learned to separate his persona, from the real person.
It's interesting that you bring up, you know, Kiss and Alice Cooper, because that's so different. That's a that's different than what Ismay is doing. You know,
no,
Ismay. No, I'm just saying that it really contrasts the show, the showmanship. You know, when Rob and I were teenagers or young teens, you know, in the 70s, you know, it was only showmanship. It was don't show yourself. You know, it was, wasn't it? I mean, that's what they were doing. And
well, it's also hard. What I'm trying to say is harder to find out about the actual person.
Oh, yeah.
Too.
Yeah. Without the internet, it was.
Unless they were interviewed or something, but yeah.
Yeah, but you still can't, you still can't find it because there's no streaming. So
yeah.
Yeah, it was hard back then.
I mean, there's so much more control back then of your public image. Like, if you only were interviewed by, you know, magazines, print magazines or on the radio, that's like 1/1,000,000th of what's out there now. And it's true. It's an interesting, it's an interesting thing, the whole persona thing. And, you know, the farther I go along, the more I see myself having to like create a bit of a separate self from myself on the stage. But I also, I don't feel like my performance is a persona. It's just, it's definitely a version of myself and it's not far off. And honestly, I found way more success as a performer in connecting with the audience, the more I can be the kind of person I am with a group of friends. That's what I've tried to bring out, and it's taken years to kind of be humorous on stage and be genuine the way that I really am in person. And I realized I didn't have to put on this sort of like, oh, I'm cool for that kind of on stage, like, oh, I'm just this whatever person. I had to figure out how do I get comfortable enough on stage that I'm actually being the kind of person I am with a group of friends. That's like what I was able to work on over time. But it just took hard work and time. It wasn't like a single decision. It was just sort of playing so many shows that you kind of stop caring in a way.
Are these people,
you have to have fun up there.
Are these people are here to see me. They paid to see me. Let's all have a good time. And
right. When I was a drummer in a couple bands, I always told myself when I was getting a little anxious, a little nervous, have a good time. Yep. If I could have a good time and just chill, then it's going to be so much better.
Nobody cares about the drummer.
No. Well, they don't. but
you're way back there.
I know they don't care about me back there, but I don't want to be so anxious that I mess up. And I won't mess up if I'm having a good time.
Yeah,
that's a good point. It's the tenseness. That's what I had to get over too, is that the tenseness and the perfectionism, as opposed to like enjoying yourself and being in the moment and expressing what that is. Yeah, I think my best shows, especially recently, have been where I'm expressing like my joy and enjoyment on stage. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So you're currently on tour and this goes into June. You have some shows in June. Do you have any plans to come to the East Coast? Like New York, New Jersey.
Yeah, I'm playing. There's an event that's a festival called Town and City Festival that's in the Boston area that's going to be in April. And then I'm looking at adding a show right now in New York City that I think is going to come through that's going to be in April as well. So I'm definitely coming out there. And then I'm going to be playing out in Nashville too. We're going to be screening Finding Lucinda in April in Nashville. So I'll be out kind of in that zone in April. Yeah. And, you know, I'll be back again after that as well. I have some relatives in New York, so I come back. I come there fairly frequently.
Okay. I always like to tell people about Sellersville, Pennsylvania.
It's just north of
Sellersville Theater. I think it seats 300, 400. So it's a nice little venue.
Wow.
Like Graham Parker's played there. I don't know if you know Dana Fuchs. She's played there many times. And
you've seen a lot of people there. Yeah.
We just saw Juliana Hatfield there.
So it's a good
one. Cool.
So our listeners can...
I've written it down.
Oh, okay.
Great. Sellersville.
So our listeners can find your website at Ismay, and that's I-S-M-A-Y music.com. You can purchase CDs, vinyl, downloads, also information on your upcoming shows. There's videos, all kinds of cool stuff on there.
Did we miss anything with that? What else is that? That's like everything.
And you're on Facebook, Instagram, you know, all the social...
Is there anything that we missed? Anything that you want to say before we go?
I don't think so. That was pretty comprehensive. I mean,
question.
I covered the long and the short of it.
Also, I have to say that you have some of the best audio sound equipment. Am I right? She's so clear compared to some of the stuff that we have gotten. We've gotten some poolside iPhones
We're talking about the interview itself.
No, I'm talking about now. You are so crystal clear. Yeah. And Rob loves that.
We had one guy, he shows up and he's literally has his shirt off and he's and there's people walking like
cookies? You want cookies?
There's people walking. Oh, he's at some, I think he was at a hotel, but he's at the hotel pool. And there's people walking behind him.
I'm not mentioning his name though, but
no, we won't.
No.
We had one person who was, I love her. I'm not going to say her name, but she was outside and her son was at a
birthday party.
Party.
So she fitted in. It's like, okay, the kids at the party, let's do a video. An interview.
So anyway.
Yeah. And that's cool. That's cool.
We've had some technical problems.
Yeah. But
I'm glad you noticed. I mean, I like sounding good and people understand what I'm hearing. And, you know, being audiophile, I think it's important.
Yeah, you must have a really good mic there. Because, you know, we get a lot of people on their laptops.
I will say I'm lacking in the camera department, but I do like the audio stuff. This is a Sennheiser shotgun mic that I've had for like 10 or so years, and I love using it.
Yeah.
We have the Audio Technique mics here.
Yeah, there's a nice.
See, those are great, though. I mean, they're set up standard, too, because this is more flexible. I only have it because I don't have, like, one place that I do recording. So this is nice. I can kind of shift around and, you know, do wherever. But, yeah, I like it to be quiet.
We're in my music room. I wish I could. I have all music stuff in here and my stereo, all my vinyl albums. I started collecting.
Oh, cool.
I'm up to 500 albums and I got to, you know. Tone it down.
That's round two in your life. Album collecting. Vinyl up and then down and back up.
Yeah, I sold them all in the 90s and now I'm buying back stuff that I had before.
Yeah. That's wild.
So thank you.
Ismay, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Yeah. Great.
Thank you all too. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank
you. Fantastic.
Have a great rest of the day.
Well, hope you guys have a good rest of your day.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, bye.
Bye
bye. I am so tired then I hear a sudden sound, horse and a woman astride. I run to them and follow as I can, just then behind, then beside. I turn to see someone else there like me. We walk for miles and I am not alone. I'm back where I wanna be. Good as dead, now together I could cry. Please don't leave me, stay forever. We could be a group just as three.
You've been listening to No Good Music. Today's interview was produced and edited by Rob J. Lilly and recorded via Zoom at the Did You Say
7
Studios in Washington, New Jersey. You can find No Good Music on Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Spotify, Pandora, and almost anywhere you listen to podcasts. Exit Music by the band 99%. The songs The Ohio, Stranger in the Barn, I Called You Up, Screaming Family, and The Lonely Stallion, used with permission from Ismay.